Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. My guest today is Scott Spratt, who is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service office in Melbourne. Scott's been on with us a number of times before, and this year in early July, he was on to look at the 2009 hurricane season and kind of give a forecast for how that looked. And as we know, it's been a very mild season, but there is something connected to the reason that this was a mild hurricane season, which is going to be the topic of our show today. So let me just back up and say we think of Oklahoma and Kansas as sort of tornado alley in the United States, but here in Florida, we do have a tornado season ourselves, and it comes in the kind of midwinter into the early to middle spring. And tornadoes here can be, particularly in the above the center line of the state, can be quite severe, as we've seen in recent years. So Scott's on with us to talk today about the outlook for Florida's 2009/10 tornado season. Welcome, Scott.
Hi, Court. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Good to have you back. So this is something particularly pertinent to our new listeners on WMFE out of Orlando, because a lot of the most active zone for tornadoes in Florida is kind of from Orlando north, and so Scott's going to talk about that with us. So what's the linkage, Scott, between the mild hurricane season we've had this past year and the outlook for this year's tornado season, if we want to call it that?
Right. Well, it's all connected to the El Nino phenomena. And the El Nino really is a warming of the Pacific Ocean. The Pacific Ocean waters across the western Pacific, which are normally quite warm, that pool of warm water in an El Nino year transitions from the western Pacific across the central Pacific and eventually reaches the coast of South America across the eastern side of the Pacific Ocean. And as that warming occurs, there's an interaction that happens, and there's an altering of the jet stream pattern that happens in the atmosphere. So it's basically a feedback mechanism between the ocean and the atmosphere. And the jet stream, which is usually further north during a non-El Nino year, shifts southward and comes very close to or over the state of Florida during an El Nino year at times.
So I guess what happens is that an El Nino causes easterly winds or winds blowing to the east that protect us from hurricanes by shearing the tops off of what would be forming hurricanes out in the Atlantic. It blows their tops off and keeps them from becoming hurricanes. So that's a good thing for us here on the east coast of Florida, because it prevents and suppresses hurricanes, but it's a bad thing in terms of tornadoes. So how does that work?
That's exactly right. The same wind shear, as you mentioned, that causes that disruption of the vertical development or the strengthening of the clouds and thunderstorm activity that causes the hurricanes to develop, that's disrupted during an El Nino year because of this wind shear, the southward movement of the jet stream. But that wind shear during the wintertime actually becomes favorable for tornadoes to develop. So even without an El Nino, we can have a number of tornadoes across the state of Florida during our traditional tornado season, the cool season. But with the El Nino in place, the stronger jet stream winds correlate to a much higher chance for thunderstorms to become severe and eventually acquire some rotation and become tornadic. And in fact, we see our strongest tornadoes, strong to violent tornadoes, occur during El Nino years across the state of Florida when we look back over the historical record.
Well, let's do that. Let's recap kind of the recent year, anyway, history of Florida tornado activity.
Well, the last year through 2009 actually has been quieter than normal across the state thus far. In a typical year, we see about 65 tornadoes across the state of Florida from the Panhandle down to the Florida Keys. And that number can vary quite a bit year to year, but on average about 65 tornadoes per year. This year, thus far, right through November, we've seen only about 35 or 36 tornadoes across the state. So we've seen less than normal so far, and I think that's, for the most part, due to a very slow start to the season this year. January, February, March of this year, I think we only saw one tornado across the entire state of Florida, where we typically would see as many as a dozen during that time period. So we had, if you think back to the early part of the year, we had quite a bit of a drought occurring. And we didn't really have a lot of thunderstorm activity during that time period. So the lack of rainfall, lack of thunderstorms that occurred early in the year really meant that we didn't have a chance for tornado development.
Was last year, last summer, let's say the summer of 2008, was that an El Nino year?
It was not. No, we were transitioning out of a La Nina, which is the opposite of the El Nino. So we were transitioning from a La Nina to the El Nino, and we're kind of in neutral conditions between the two extremes, really.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have expected there to be much tornado activity last winter, but it's this winter we're looking forward at. But still looking back further, what have been some years in the recent past in which there have been bad tornado outbreaks in Florida?
Yeah, if we look back to the most recent El Nino year, that was late 2006 and the beginning of 2007, we saw quite a bit of intense thunderstorm activity and severe weather across the state. And that severe weather, one of the main episodes of severe weather during that time period was Christmas Day 2006, when a strong tornado struck the Daytona Beach area. The tornado actually moved across the Embry-Riddle University campus. And fortunately, it happened on Christmas Day, and there was nobody on the campus at that time. The tornado came right down the runway of the airport complex there and actually impacted some of the university buildings.
Wow.
And had it been any other day of the year, there likely would have been several injuries and fatalities during that event. But it was just, we were really fortunate that it happened on Christmas Day of all days of the year.
My gosh.
And that event led up to the major event that happened during the 2006-2007 period. And that was occurred on Groundhog's Day, February 2nd of 2007, when there were a series of tornadoes, strong to violent tornadoes that moved across rural parts of Lake County into western Volusia County. And during that overnight event, during about a three-hour period, 21 people lost their lives during those tornadoes.
Mm. And I think I read that 76 people were injured. I mean, it was quite a swath of destruction through there. Going back even further, you know, I was looking, Wikipedia at Florida tornadoes. It's amazing by now you can look up any little subcategory of information and knowledge and kind of get a quick snapshot of what went on. But in 1998, also in February, there was a very severe outbreak. In fact, worse than the one in 2007, right?
Right. The 1998 El Nino that occurred that year was actually the strongest El Nino that we have on record. So it was a very strong El Nino. And we look at the correlations between the strength of the El Nino and the severe weather season across Florida. And we see a strong correlation there that the stronger the El Nino event is, the stronger the warming of the Pacific waters are, the stronger the feedback is to the atmosphere. So the stronger the jet stream is and the more persistent the jet stream will be over Florida. So the enhancement to our severe weather season is all that more great. That doesn't mean that during a weaker El Nino, we can't have impact. The 2006-2007 El Nino was actually a weak El Nino, and we had the tornadoes that we just had mentioned here. But 1998 was the strongest El Nino on record, and during the overnight hours of February 22nd into the early morning hours of February 23rd, a number of very strong tornadoes moved across central Florida and affected the Osceola, Seminole, and Orange County area, and 42 people died during those tornadoes that night.
Wow. And nearly 200 people were injured, I think. So both of those were in February, and then both of them were associated with El Nino years, but you said the one in 2007 was a fairly weak El Nino, and the one in 98 was the strongest one on record. Where does our El Nino this year at this point fall in that range?
Right. Our expectations on the current El Nino is that it will fall somewhere in between those two extremes, really. It looks like it'll be a moderate intensity El Nino. We still don't know for sure, as it's still evolving. But it's been a weak El Nino up to this point, but it's starting to trend up temperature-wise in the Pacific towards a moderate event, and we think it will peak at a moderate event in December, late December into early January.
So that's not good news, and in fact, that's why you're on the show with us today, because you've been running around the state in your capacity as a warning coordination meteorologist for the National Weather Service, talking to emergency management officials and the public about the possibility, you know, not crying that the sky is falling, but it might fall, you know, the possibility of there being a strong tornado season this year.
That's right. When we look at the past history, we see this correlation. The correlation doesn't mean it's always there or it's always going to occur. And the El Nino itself doesn't have a direct relationship to the tornadoes. It's really just enhancing the environment to make the conditions more favorable for tornadoes. So hopefully things don't come together exactly right to form these real intense storms this year. But looking back over past history, the strong jet stream over us during the course of the entire cool season off and on during that time period, as cold fronts move through the state and the thunderstorms develop, it seems likely that during a few of those episodes, the conditions may come together to form some strong to violent weather.
That's not a very happy outlook. So there are some other factors that can kind of countervail against it that can suppress or kind of counteract that El Nino effect. What are some of those other factors that can come into play, like drought you mentioned, huh?
Right. Well, we're really looking at a number of different factors all having to come together at the right time and right amplitude for all of these factors to play out. And a lot of times we'll see the individual parameters that we look at for the development of strong to violent tornadoes may all be potentially available for a given event, but maybe the timeliness of those events don't exactly mesh together. So for example, the instability or the energy in the atmosphere to produce the thunderstorms may precede the stronger wind shear by several hours, so they don't exactly line up. And that's something that's very difficult to tell until maybe even hours before the event. So we could look at 1, 2, 3 days in advance and talk about a high potential for a tornado development on a given situation. But we really have to come down to those final hours to see if all those individual parameters line up exactly together at the right time.
Okay, gotcha. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're here today with my guest, Scott Spratt, who is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist in Melbourne's National Weather Service office. And we're talking about the outlook or the prospects for a severe 2009-2010 Florida tornado season. And this would be, as Scott was saying, something that will ramp up in association with a strengthening El Nino out in the Pacific, but it causes weather meteorological conditions that are conducive to the formation of tornadoes across the U.S. and including across the northern half of Florida. We hope it won't happen, but there's a chance of it, and that's why we're talking about it today. So is there a track that tornadoes generally follow in Florida, Scott? Is there a... It seems to me that maybe there's a line from Tampa Bay to the Cape that severe storms all year long seem to follow along, and much more lightning along that line from Tampa Bay to the Cape than south of there or even than much north of there. So is there kind of a tornado zone or a tornado alley, we could call it, in Florida?
Well, looking back over the records again, we see the area, there's no place in the state that is immune from being impacted by a tornado, even a strong to violent tornado during an El Nino year. We've seen back in the early part of the 19th or the 20th century, we've seen some strong tornadoes from El Ninos affect the South Florida area as well. But there's a lot of the southern peninsula and south central peninsula doesn't have a lot of population over the interior. So some of these tornadoes may have occurred there in the past decades where we didn't have them appear in the record books just because we didn't have a good reporting of those tornadoes. So the reporting of the tornadoes are definitely better from central Florida northward where the population is higher, or along the southeast coast of Florida, obviously.
Sure. Well, you're talking about strong tornadoes and weak tornadoes, but there is a Fujitsu scale in which tornado strength is gauged. So what's the picture of Florida tornadoes? Do they tend to be weaker or sometimes very strong? I mean, you know, the ones that we talked about in 2007 and 1998, were they extremely strong or a mixture of weak and strong, or how does that work?
Right. I think everybody's familiar with the hurricane, the Saffir-Simpson hurricane scale that goes from Category 1 to Category 5, where Category 1 is a weak hurricane with winds of 75 to 90 miles per hour, and a Category 5 is the strongest with winds over 155 miles per hour. We have a similar scale for tornadoes. It's called the Fujita scale. And the Fujita scale ranges from F0 to F5.
I was mixing it up with jujitsu, which can also flip you over. Anyway, all right, Fujita scale, never
right,
mind.
But the 95% of the tornadoes in Florida are F0 or F1. So those are the lowest intensity on the scale. And those are winds of blow about 105 miles per hour. So still very strong winds, damaging winds. Hmm. But as far as the tornado, the relative tornado scale is, they're on the weak side. The tornadoes that caused the fatalities back in 2007 and then back in 1998, all five or six of those tornadoes were of intensity 3 on the scale. So moderate to strong on the scale, and the winds were about 140 to 165 miles per hour. So basically the equivalent of a Category 5 hurricane.
Wow. Is that a factor in the observation that everybody makes, which is that 9 out of 10 times when you see a TV report of a tornado, it's in a mobile home park, and trailers, mobile homes have been damaged, storage sheds and other homes have been damaged, but is the relative weakness of tornadoes in Florida a factor in the relative high preponderance of their impact on mobile home parks?
Right. The perception is always there because
it's more than a perception.
It's there. It definitely stands out when you see media reports of the tornadoes, because even an F0 tornado is going to cause pretty substantial damage to a mobile home park. We had the tornado earlier this year up in Volusia County. And that tornado was an F0, and it went through 3 mobile home parks and caused considerable damage to the mobile homes. And several mobile homes were deemed unlivable totally during that event. That's an F-zero, winds of 65 to 85, 90 miles per hour.
Wow.
If that same tornado went through an area of permanently built homes, either concrete block or even wood-constructed homes, the damage would be much less. There'd be some roof and shingle damage and damage to carports and certainly pool enclosures. But that would be it for the most part. And it really may not have made a media headline during moving through a neighborhood like that.
We're listening to Scott Spratt, a meteorologist at the National Weather Service office in Melbourne, talk with us today on American Variety about the outlook for the 2009 and 10 Florida tornado season, if we can call it that, where there's an expectation that we might have a more severe tornado season this year than in other years, particularly peaking around in February, they seem to. So where does Florida stand, Scott, in relation to Tornado Alley, which is out in Oklahoma, Kansas, where it's big, long expanses of flat prairie and plains that seem to allow tornadoes to generate more? Do we get the same systems coming across that have caused tornadoes over there or further west then come across and cause tornadoes here, or is it totally separate and independent and decoupled?
Well, they are the same weather systems when we talk about the panhandle of Florida. So extreme North Florida can have tornadoes and do have tornadoes, even strong tornadoes, on any given year. The relationship to El Nino isn't quite as strong for the Florida panhandle because the weather systems you're talking about that do affect Tornado Alley, they move across the southeast U.S. and kind of the tail end or the bottom end impact the extreme northern part of Florida and the border with Alabama and Georgia. And that's because the jet stream typically, when it dips down from the northern latitudes, gets about that far south, even on a non-El Nino year. But during an El Nino year, it dips much further south and gets down to central or even south Florida at times. So that's when we don't usually have the factors in place to have tornadoes or strong tornadoes in our part of the peninsula. That becomes more likely during an El Nino year. And the one thing that's quite obvious to us when we look at the impacts from these storms during El Nino year, since they affect an area much further south, the jet stream moves across the Baja of Southern California, then across South Texas and the Gulf of Mexico, and then moves across the state of Florida. So the weather kind of follows that same track. So the storms that we have that bring our real violent weather are moving across the Gulf of Mexico before they reach Florida. So the day before or 2 days before the event gets to us, there is no news headlines about it impacting areas upstream from us because it's moving across the open Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
Whereas the storms that affect the panhandle of Florida or South Georgia or Alabama are moving across from the Tornado Alley area, and the news is playing these reports of the damage that happened a day or two earlier to the west. So people, their awareness is higher during those events than it will be for us.
Is there radar out there? I mean, can you look at New Orleans radar or Tampa radar and see tornadoes out over the Gulf that are coming this way, or storms that are likely to generate tornadoes? Can you get a day's worth of warning by looking out over the Gulf?
Well, the radar will let us look out maybe 150, 200 miles south of the Gulf Coast, so we can see adjacent to the coastline what's happening. But a lot of these storms that we're seeing are occurring further south than that. It's happening several hundred miles south of the Gulf of Mexico coastline. And for that, we can use satellite imagery to get a feel for how intense the thunderstorm activity is, how deep they are in the atmosphere. And we can use lightning data is very important because we can see the amount of lightning activity occurring in these storms that helps us gauge the intensity of them.
Okay.
But it doesn't have the ability that the radar has. The radar allows us to see the Doppler winds or the rotation within the storms.
Right.
And that only happens within about 125 miles or so of an individual radar site. So we wouldn't be able to see that until it became, a few hundred miles or 100 miles or so off the Gulf Coast of Florida.
Okay, so a few hours away. I've heard, I think, that the U.S. is the tornado capital of the world, that we have more tornadoes here than any other country or any other large landmass. Is that true?
It is definitely true. On average, we get about 1,000 tornadoes per year across the continental U.S. And there's a lot of other countries throughout the world that do have tornadoes. In fact, all continents have had reported tornadoes before except Antarctica.
Yeah.
So they occur throughout the world, but they are much, much more common in the United States and other countries. I think the second most favorable country for tornadoes is Canada, actually. And there are about one-tenth as many tornadoes there on average as in the U.S.
Yeah, so part of the same landmass, just cooler weather and so on. But, I mean, gosh, you'd think China with its enormous landmass and the Mongolian steppes, and there's huge amounts of flat land out there. So what is it about the North American continent, and particularly the southern half of it here, that that generates tornadoes, whereas other huge land masses like Russia and China don't.
Right. Well, the greatest factor is just the geography of North America itself. We have the Gulf of Mexico, which is a very tropical, warm body of water where the deep moisture can pool or develop across that area and just remain in place until a weather system moves from west to east across the country. And then that that very warm, moist air is able to advect or lift northward into that developing weather system and come on shore. And then we have the Rocky Mountains, the north to south extent of the mountains will block air masses and will cause the cold air that's developing in Canada to come down just east of the Rockies. So just the configuration of that, the Rocky Mountains going north to south, and then the Gulf of Mexico lying just to the south and east of that, the cold and dry air masses developing along the Rocky Mountains brings together those two differing air masses that are one factor in the development of the tornadoes.
So it's the collision of different air masses that are coming from different directions with wind blowing in different directions and different temperatures also, or is it kind of any time fronts collide? I mean, is there some simple way to describe where and how tornadoes form?
Well, there's a number of factors. One factor is the cold, dry air mass merging or interacting with a warm, moist air mass. So You have the two extremes of temperature and humidity coming together. That's one factor. Another factor is a lifting of that air mass. So even though the air mass is favorable for thunderstorms, something needs to lift that air mass. And that's usually provided by a cold front that's moving down. So as a storm system develops, say, east of the Rockies and starts to spread from west to east across the U.S., a cold front will develop, and that cold, dry air will start to surge to the south and east. And ahead of that cold front will be that warm, moist, southerly winds coming up from the Gulf of Mexico. And with that merger of those two air masses, the air mass is lifted upward, and that causes the air to cool, condense, and actually form the thunderstorm activity that becomes very deep in the atmosphere. So that allows the thunderstorms to develop. And then the next ingredient we need for the tornadoes to develop is a wind shear. And a wind shear is just differing wind direction and or speed with height in the atmosphere. And as we develop a storm system, low pressure over the, say, the Great Plains, that low pressure allows warm and moist air to advect northward from the Gulf of Mexico. So in the low levels, we may have a southerly wind of 30, 40, even 50 miles per hour just off the surface of the earth. And then at the higher altitude, say 15,000 to 20,000 feet, we have strong westerly winds that are moving down from east of the Rockies into the storm system. So we have the cool, dry air aloft in the weather system. So, and that's bringing strong westerly winds, maybe 100 or even 150 miles per hour. So those differing wind speeds as we go up through the vertical part of the atmosphere causes the spin, what we call the vorticity, the spin in the atmosphere that will allow a mesocyclone or a developing storm to the entire storm will start to rotate.
Okay. Well, you said that on average there is about 1,000 tornadoes per year in the U.S. How many, on average, in an average year, how many people are killed and injured, and what kind of damage does all that cause nationwide?
Sure. On average, about 65 people are killed across the U.S. each year from tornadoes, but that number varies widely year to year. There were some years where the number, I think just 2 years ago, the number was over 130within the United States. And, of course, it only takes a couple, one or two of these major events, like our event in 1998 in Florida, where 42 people died just in the Orlando area, to really make a difference in that number nationwide. As far as the tornado intensity, I mentioned 95% of the tornadoes that impact Florida are F0 or F1, and most of those occur during the summertime. We actually have more tornadoes during the summer than during the winter in Florida, but those tend to be the very weak tornadoes, and they stay on the ground less than a quarter mile for the most part, and only last a few minutes, if that. During the wintertime is when we can get these stronger tornadoes up to F2, F3. Even a few F4s have been recorded in the state, and that was back decades ago. We've never had an F5 recorded in the state of Florida, thankfully. That would be a tornado with winds over 200 miles per hour and just total devastation. F3, even in 1998 and 2007, caused very considerable damage. And those are winds only around 150 to 160 miles per hour, relatively speaking. So, we certainly don't need or don't want a F4, F5, but the F2s and 3s can cause just as much damage or just as much devastation and loss of life.
How does that loss of life from tornadoes compare to, let's say, on average, the loss of life from hurricanes or other natural disasters like earthquakes and forest fires? I mean, we have the huge spike in the chart with Katrina, obviously, which probably skewed all hurricane death stats forever in the U.S., much higher, right? But if you can kind of mentally leave that out, on average, with a really average year, are tornadoes the deadliest event?
No, flash floods are actually the deadliest events. Flash floods that affect that occur in mountainous areas of the western U.S. and the Appalachians of the eastern United States. So flash floods are cause considerably more deaths. And then in the state of Florida, the greatest death toll from weather-related events are actually rip currents and lightning. Lightning and rip currents are number one and number two in the state of Florida. So, it's something that occurs much more frequently.
Yeah.
And I think people's just their understanding, even though they know lightning is a daily threat, they can't work around lightning that occurs every day. You wouldn't be doing much with your day-to-day life if you have to work around lightning constantly and stay indoors. So every time we go outdoors during a lightning storm, we are taking some chance that a lightning strike could cause a injury or fatality.
Gee, I thought about lightning, but I figured that was just a handful of people, five or six a year or something like that, if that. But in Florida, that's more than tornadoes on average.
Right. Yeah. It's over recent years, we've had as many as 20 to 25 people die per year in Florida across the state from lightning fatalities. And rip currents are quite a serious threat too, because the weather can be beautiful. It can be a beautiful sunny day. The seas can only be maybe 2 or 3 feet, a nice surf out there, and it looks like a great day, and the water's warm, and people will enter the surf, and conditions will be favorable for rip currents. And we've had four rip current fatalities just in Volusia County alone this year on the Daytona Beach area.
That's interesting. So I would have thought of those as kind of minor sources, and in fact, a rip current, I don't really even, in my mind, class it in the same category as a natural disaster or a natural threat, but of course it is.
Right.
I didn't think about flash floods because we don't live out in the canyons and the arroyos of the West, but those people are much more aware of it out there. We see it a little bit on the Weather Channel or on the news, but it seems to be sort of distant and isolated, I guess.
Right. And most of these events, there's one or two individuals, being caught in a rip current or being struck by lightning at a time. So the numbers are small at one given time, but over the course of a year, they do add up, where on the other hand, for a tornado or for a hurricane, it's the other way around. They're rare events, but the numbers can be quite high for any given event.
So for all of our listeners who are in the tornado zone for this winter's possibly stronger than average threat for tornadoes, what's the best protection? How do you find out what the threats are, and what can you best do to protect yourself from it if it's coming down on you?
Right. I'd say that the first thing you want to do is just like we say during the hurricane season, have a plan. Know in advance what you're going to do before that tornado warning is issued, before the weather or the imminent weather moves into your area. So just like the tornado plan, the hurricane plan, where we're going to have a family plan to maybe understand whether you need to evacuate. If you're going to live in a coastal plain or maybe inland, you're going to have a wind threat or a flooding threat, and you need to know what your risks are. The same thing for the tornado season. If you need to know what your vulnerabilities are with your particular home. If you live in a mobile home, that's the highest vulnerability, obviously. And we're asking people that live in mobile homes to have a plan in advance and even consider staying with family and relatives if we're expecting strong overnight tornadoes to occur.
Just quickly, Scott, we're about out of time. Is there a NOAA or a National Weather Service website that people can go to learn more about tornadoes?
Yes, our website is weather.gov. That's weather.gov/Melbourne. And on that website, you can click on a hazard link, and that will tell you all the information about what we're expecting over the next 24 hours as far as severe weather hazards.
Scott Spratt, thank you so much for being on with us on American Variety and talking about the Florida tornado season. We think in terms of the hurricane season, but we do have a tornado season too. Thanks to you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.